I've never shared publicly before. A very interesting story about the story behind the story of how I became religious. It was a story that happened 26 Kislevs ago. And it wasn't something that happened in Jerusalem. It was something that happened very, very, very far from Jerusalem, geographically and spiritually. I was in a place called Indonesia, which is a very large country in the Pacific, spread across many hundreds of islands in the Pacific. And Indonesia, I think probably no one here knows. Does everyone hear me okay? People in the back? That Indonesia is actually the largest Muslim country in the world. There are more Muslims living in Indonesia than in Iran, than in Saudi Arabia. And that was the place where my Chazara B'Tshuva, strangely enough, began. So to give you some background about me before I get to Indonesia 26 years ago, I grew up in Baltimore. I grew up in a wonderful conservative family, not so observant. On Hanukkah, maybe we would like light two candles some year, maybe sometimes one candle on the first night. I grew up going to a Christian prep school, which is another topic for another time, maybe next Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh Tevet, maybe I'll come back. And then after that, I went to college. I went to a small college, officially a Christian college, but basically secular college in Maine, called Bowdoin College. And there was really nothing Jewishly going on there at all. And when I was at Bowdoin, I had always been a person who was really, really searching for meaning. And like many liberal Jews, liberal kind of not so Jewishly educated Jews, I expressed that search for meaning through social activism, political activism. In college, I studied Russian and political science. I was determined to liberate Eastern Europe, to bring down the Soviet Union, small things like that. But when I was in college, at this very, very, very non-Jewish college, you've seen the LL Bean catalog, if you know what I'm talking about, that was my college was half an hour away, that was my college. That, not a very Jewish place at all. That's what my college looked like, that's what I mean. I felt myself really, really feeling this really, really huge void inside myself. As a person who was really always searching for meaning and searching for something more, I just wasn't finding it. I felt like I was just starving spiritually in terms of like I wasn't finding the meaning I was looking for. And now looking back, of course, we all know it was that Jewish soul within me. I think that, we know that every Jew in the whole world has a Jewish soul. And for some Jews, like the women in this room, Baruch Hashem, that soul is so bright that it's like when the Chabadnikim light the Chanukiyot on the street, that's each and every woman in this room. Women who are living as Jews and living in Israel, Baruch Hashem. And for me, I had that same light somewhere in there, somewhere underneath, hidden underneath the ignorance and like the lack of education Jewishly, and the assimilation and whatever. I had it somewhere deep inside there, but that light, it was just struggling to stay lit, So like many people who are searching for spirituality, searching for meaning, I unfortunately didn't look towards Israel as a place where I could possibly find that meaning. I had, Israel in my mind, it wasn't an interesting place. It was about as interesting as the conservative shul that I grew up in. Not so interesting. And so I looked towards the East. I wanted to go to the Far East. There I would find spirituality, maybe. There I'd find something meaningful. There I'd find something to fill my soul. Although I don't think I called it soul at that time. I was looking for meaning. So I was supposed to go to Nepal. And in the end, because I had a certain minor health issue, I wasn't able to go to Nepal. So I was supposed, this is, my junior year abroad. So the program, so instead of Nepal, then the people who ran this, the program, the organization that ran these programs said, well, we have room in the program to Indonesia. Never, haven't really heard of Indonesia, I didn't know anything about it, but that's east, that's far away, that's far east, that's definitely east and far, far east. Go! So I went to a place called Bali, which is, it's as beautiful as they say, truly an island paradise. And when I was there, the purpose of the program, the goal of the directors of the program, who were two American professors, they were going to introduce the program participants to real Balinese culture, to the Balinese dancing and art and mask making, and also to the Balinese religion. Unlike the rest of Indonesia, which is Muslim, Bali is a Hindu island. So the people there, then they bring, all the time I was there, they were bringing, I lived with a family in like their little compound. It was a very interesting experience. But they were always preparing beautiful, beautiful offerings for their gods. And at one point, the people, the professors who ran my program, they decided that that we all would get ceremonial outfits made for ourselves. And so we all had to choose out a beautiful kind of lacy fabric for the shirt and a beautiful batik fabric for our skirts. I don't remember what the men in our program wore, what the guys wore. And these were called pakain adat. Adat, you hear the word dati, dat? Religious clothing, okay? So one day, it was a big Balinese holiday, and they put us all, we all piled into the minivan in our pakain adat, and a bunch of American, college students, and they took us to worship idols. So they took us to an ancient place way up in like the mountains of Bali. And imagine, it's kind of like a Balinese maybe Stonehenge, like ancient carved rocks. Okay, but they're very ancient, probably thousands and thousands of years old. And the directors of our program said, okay, now getting on the bus, okay, here's the idols, these stone idols. Okay, bow down to them. So there were a bunch of Jewish kids in my program. I wouldn't say mostly Jewish, but it's actually even possible that we were mostly Jewish. And everyone was bowing down to the idols and didn't have any problem doing that. And something really strange happened. All of a sudden, I was like, no. And I turned to this guy. There was a lovely guy in my program named Dave from Long Island, this big Jewish nose. And I said, Dave, I don't think we as Jews are supposed to be doing this. Like, remember, like, Shema Yisrael, God is one. I remember something like we're not supposed to be bowing down to idols. And he said, Jenny, I'm really sorry. Like, I don't know, I'm Catholic. But I didn't do it. Yay! And I think that looking back on that experience, I realized just how significant it was for 19-year-old Jenny Friedman, with really no Jewish background, but really this really, like all of us, a Jewish soul. And, for some Jews, they might have to be pushed so far. Say, will you eat this ham? No. Will you bow down to an idol? No, I'm a Jew. Until that assimilated Jew says, I'm a Jew. And that was what happened to me that day. So a few weeks later, each member of the program was supposed to go to do our own independent study program for a month, independent study project. So most of the other students in the program, then they studied like Balinese dancing or mask making, things like that. And I did something different. I told you I was a political science major, and I decided to go to a different island to study the Indonesian student movement. Indonesia is at least at the time, was a dictatorship, and there was a bunch of students, several hundred students, who were kind of protesting this oppressive government, doing hunger strikes and various things like that. So I traveled to the island next to Bali, which is called Java, and there's a city there called Yogyakarta. Yogyakarta, it's like the Boston, let's say, of Indonesia. It's many students there, many colleges, a bunch of universities there, thousands and thousands of students there. And I thought that's a good place to research, to meet students, to interview people who are members of this student movement. And the interesting thing was, I had one name of someone who could introduce me to someone else, and before long I was meeting a whole bunch of students involved in this movement. And the interesting thing was that most of them were religious Muslims, very religious Muslims. I was spending time, I befriended these very devout Muslim women who were members of this student movement, and all of them wore the traditional hijab, the traditional head covering. And I was just really friends with them, hanging out with them, and they had, and I would just hang out with them and joke around like for hours. I just kind of fell in love with them. They were just lovely, had a real sense of humor. And the person I became closest with was a young woman named Pippin, very devout young woman with her head covering. She was about to get married. And she had a certain strength that I'd never seen before. Even among the way that I'd grown up, like in my college, very feminist, Western, liberated women, there's something about this woman, Pippin, a certain strength that I'd never seen. So just to give you an example, one day she invited me to go out with her to eat at a very small restaurant across from her house. So there were two things in Java, in Yogyakarta, that I found very difficult. One was dealing with the traffic. Let me explain. traffic lights, like when you cross the street, like you wait for the light to turn green? In Java, there are no traffic lights. They don't exist. If you're a pedestrian, you just have to walk, just step in front of the traffic. There's no waiting for the light to change, nada. You just have to walk into the street and hope that all the cars speeding by will stop for you. So Pippin and I were crossing the street, and for me, I was terrified. I would do anything I could to avoid crossing a street, going way out of my way to avoid crossing streets. But so we were at her house, and we had to cross the street to get to her, to get to the restaurant, a very big street. Imagine like Karen Hayeso, that big, okay? During rush hour, that big and that crowded. And Pippin just, think of Nachshon Ben Aminadav, just steps in the street. Just starts walking across the street and doesn't even pay any attention to the cars. Everyone just stops, lets her by. It's like, wow, Pippin, you're amazing. You're not afraid of the cars at all. Wow. And another thing that was very difficult in Indonesia, in Java, was that I was harassed constantly by men. I would step out my front door and I would get, flirted with, harassed, all sorts of inappropriate comments constantly, constantly, constantly. And so just the men that I really kind of didn't want to, anytime I'd seen Indonesian men, I kind of knew what was about to happen. So I went with Pippin and we went into like this little restaurant, and it was all men there except Pippin and me. I was like, Pippin, you're not like scared, like you're the only woman here. She says, no. And I said, Pippin, how is it? You know, you cross the street, and you're not afraid of it at all. You're not afraid of crossing the street at all. I'm terrified. And these men, you just come here, you're not afraid at all. I'm terrified. And she said, I'll tell you something, Jenny, with a smile. She said, when you're afraid of Tuhan, when you're afraid of God, you don't fear cars or men. At one point during my stay there, then we went to a conference together. It was a conference for social activists somewhere out in the mountains of Java, in a beautiful place. And so for a few days, I was living in the same room with Pippin. So I got to see how she would change into her beautiful white clothing and how she would pray 5 times a day and, you know, wash herself off. And I just thought, wow, I was just blown away. I'd never really seen that before. I'd never seen a person who had a religion before, a person who was serving God before. And I said to her, you know, Pippin, you're amazing. Like, you pray all the time. And she said, Jenny, tell me something. You're an Arang Yehudi. Arang Yehudi is how they say Jew in Indonesian. I'll teach you a little bit of Indonesian. You know the word orangutan, like a monkey? That's actually an Indonesian word. Arang utan means a person of the forest, right? So how do you say a person who's a Jew? Arang Yehudi. So no similarity between the two. Okay, so she said, do Arang Yehudi pray? I never see you pray. And I said, I'll tell you something about Arang Yehudi. Arang Yehudi, we only pray on Saturday mornings, only once a week, and then only if there's a synagogue there. So like, I'm not allowed to pray because I'm like Jewish. And she said, oh, so how is it possible? Don't you miss God? You can imagine as like a young Jewish girl in among very extreme Muslims, that it wasn't all 100% of wonderful, rosy, positive experience. I was never interested in Israel before, had no opinions about it, pro or against or anything. No interest in going there, and all of a sudden I was meeting people who were obsessed with how much they hated Israel. I would just open my mouth and say, I'm from America. People would say, where are you from? And I'd say, I'm American. And right away, they know America, all of them, they know America supports Israel. Right away, bashing Israel. Israel, they're murderers, they're racist, they're committing genocide, they're the worst. As though there was no worse, more evil country that had ever existed in the entire world. And something very strange happened. You know, I had never been interested at all in Israel. I never interested me as much, as I said, as my conservative synagogue growing up. And then all of a sudden, you know, if someone said to you, you know, don't go behind those doors. You're just behind those doors. There's cannibals. There's flesh-eating cannibals. There's the worst people, most evil people in the world. Don't go behind those doors. You're actually a little bit curious, like, to see, like, what is behind those doors. Like, wow, like, what do flesh-eating cannibals actually look like? So, as I said, that was Kislev. I spent that Indonesia, the time in Indonesia, was Kislev 26 years ago. I got back to Baltimore, end of the program, and it was Hanukkah. And I lit, for the first time in my life, I lit Hanukkah candles, and all of a sudden, I was interested. Like, what does it mean to be a religious person? What does it mean? What is my religion? Who am I as a Jew? A few weeks later, I told you I was a Russian and political science major. I was supposed to go to Russia. But again, there was a whole problem, long story, political instability. I wasn't allowed to go to the Soviet Union. And I came to Israel. And that's the story behind the story of how I became religious. So we all know that 30 days before the Chag, the light of that Chag enters the world. And so now we're, and this Rosh Chodesh, we're feeling the light of Hanukkah. And so I want to bless all of you here. Like, as I felt that light, as I felt that light entering my Jewish soul, that we should all of the Chabad Chanukiah candles sitting in this room, that we should all feel ourselves that soul burst the flame. Chodesh Tov.